how do you let me use the database that I love? And everyone has a particular database that they love, whether it's SQL, whether it's Postgres, whether it's MySQL, whether it's a particular NoSQL database. Please let me use it. And that's something we definitely do. And the other thing we often hear from people is, if you can let me use it as a service, instead of me having to provision and manage it inside a virtual machine, life would be so much easier. And we do that now as well. And so what we're going to do is drill into specifically how you can leverage those types of capabilities with Azure. So first of all, like, before we get into the Azure piece, you know, one of the things I want to just touch on briefly is talk a little bit about SQL Server. How many people here are using SQL Server today? Great, thank you. You know, SQL Server, we had a fantastic release last year with SQL Server 2016. It's probably our fastest adopted release of SQL I think we've ever done. And this year we're shipping a fantastic update to it that we call SQL Server 2017. And this is a release that I'm incredibly excited about because it brings with it a whole bunch of new capabilities. And one of the fundamental things it brings is also now the ability to use it everywhere. So it works with Windows like it always has before, but this will also be the first release of SQL Server that we ship simultaneously on Linux as well. And so every feature, everything you can do on the Windows version, you can now do on the Linux version. It's also the first version that is native Docker and container aware, meaning you can actually run it in a container-based environment. And that's particularly useful for a lot of developer scenarios where you want to basically set up a CI/CD system, you want to do local development on your machine. Good thing is you can now basically boot up and install SQL inside a Docker image in about 5 seconds on a blank, completely new machine and tear it down and you're done. So it's a very quick way that you can actually also enable much more agile data-driven development as part of it. And with the SQL 2017 release, we have a whole bunch of great enhancements and capabilities. So we have a new query processor, we call our adaptive query processor, that basically delivers phenomenal performance. This gives us the best benchmarks and the best query processing performance we've ever seen, we think is best in the industry. And this release also includes our in-database advanced machine learning support with both Python and R. What this means is you can now take Python and R, run it inside the database as a stored procedure, and be able to use it to do advanced machine learning models against in-memory database data that you're storing inside the database. And this really opens up the ability to make your databases much more intelligent and do some really phenomenal AI and machine learning scenarios that run everywhere. And what's cool about SQL is you can use it not just on premises, you can use it not just inside a VM, but when you come to Azure, you can also now use all these capabilities as a service that we provide in a managed way. What this means is we do all of the infrastructure hosting for you, we set up high availability for you, we're doing backups for you, we're doing point-in-time recovery for you, and you don't have to think about all that, you just say, give me a database, and please let me work with it. And this ability to have, you know, that productivity that you get when it's running as a service, and that lower TCO that you get as a service, plus all this flexibility to use it everywhere, I think is a really, really powerful combination. And one of the set of updates that we announced at our build conference 2 weeks ago is also now the ability to take any existing SQL database and easily migrate it to Azure and run it in our service model. And this is both a combination of a new migration service that we're coming out with, it's in preview now, as well as a new, what we call managed service instance model. Basically, it was going to take any SQL database with no code changes at the application or database level, move it into the cloud, run it as a service, get better economics, get better performance, and not have to change anything, and basically have those apps now be cloud hosted. That's something you can only do with Azure. One of the great companies that is taking advantage of that easy lift and shift capability is DocuSign, who's one of the largest enterprise SaaS ISVs out there. They just announced as part of our build keynote that they're choosing Azure as their cloud platform going forward. And so they're on-premises today inside colo environments. They're basically now moving to public cloud, and they can now basically run all over the world as part of that, and again, take advantage of that rich SQL capability in their existing environment, in the cloud, and be able to run it all over the world. So let's show off a couple cool data scenarios inside Azure to kind of show off what this database as a service kind of buys you and sort of the productivity wins you get with it. So we're going to go ahead and create a new database from scratch. So quick question, you know, when you create a new database today in your existing environment, how long does it take you to create the database? You ask your IT department, I need a new database. 2 weeks. Anyone longer than 2 weeks? A month, okay. A couple months. Someone once told me it took 14 months on average, which sounded terrible. But that's the outlier I've heard so far. So let's go ahead and create one in the cloud, and hopefully you'll see we get a little bit better than 2 weeks. So basically, I'm going to go ahead and set new, click databases. I'm going to use the SQL database option at the top. What would you like, whoever said 2 weeks, what would you like this database to be called? What's our? Leopard Core? You're going to figure out how to spell that. Is that a nice spell right? Close enough, okay. R-E? Third, is that right? C-H-O-A-U-N. Okay, I'm not at all right. You're being very nice. Okay. Got the L right. Okay. So, we're going to create some concrete demos here. We're going to run this database in Europe, and we'll pin it to the dashboard we're going to create. And so, we're now basically creating a new SQL database from scratch called Leopard Core. And you'll see we're basically deploying it now inside Azure. So this is going to register the DNS name. It's going to place this database not just on one server, but actually four servers. So we just charge you for a single database, but we're actually running your database now in a high availability fashion across multiple servers on multiple racks, multiple power units, so that if the database has a problem, we can automatically fail it over to another server for you. And so we run these systems always in a high availability fashion. And then we're also going to set this up so we do backups, as well as what's called point-in-time restore capability. And with point-in-time restore, it basically means you can rewind the database and create a new instance of the database from any millisecond in the last 30 days. And so if you create a transaction where you accidentally delete some data or corrupt some data, you can rewind the database to exactly the point before that transaction occurred, and away you go. And what you see here now is in less than 60 seconds, our Leopard Core database is now deployed and ready to be used here in Europe. And that's all we had to do. So a lot faster than 2 weeks, or even a day, or even a couple hours. And the beauty is I can basically take these connection strings, I can load up SQL Management Studio and start using it against it, I can point Visual Studio at it and start using it against it, and I have, you know, a full SQL database that I can now program against and use. And what's nice about this is I can also scale up the database and increase and decrease the size at will with no application downtime. And so I can start this thing as a sort of small database that I'm paying, I think our cheapest database option is like $6 or €6 a month. And I can also scale it up to very large databases. And we just shipped our support for 4 terabyte systems 2 weeks ago at the Build conference. So you can run very large databases, you can run very small databases. And again, dynamically scale without any application downtime when you do it. And then the other thing is you pay only for what you use. And at any point you can delete it. So if you don't want this database anymore, this Leprechaun is now gone. I can just hit delete and boom, it's gone. Just like the rainbow, right? I'm only basically paying for the minute that the Leprechaun lived. And so I'm not actually out any kind of license costs. I'm just literally paying for the fraction of the time that it was running. And so it ends up being super economical as you're working on projects. You can create and delete them and literally pay only for what you need. So that was sort of creating a database. Let's actually look at some more advanced scenarios that we have built into the product, because it's not just about having a database, it's also about how do we make you successful with the database when you use it. So who here has ever checked in code that caused some performance issues in the application? Yeah. The rest of you are lying. But we all have. And you know, oftentimes what ends up happening is that code change is the cause of the performance issues, often because of the database interaction. You know, you checked in something where now it's doing a table scan against the database, and the code was correct, but basically when you put it in the load with real data, real production, suddenly things started to dramatically slow down. And if you have a good DBA that can help you, you can figure out what the problem is and hopefully fix it in not too too fast a time, or too slow a time. You know, the challenge is most of us don't always have access to great DBAs. and it takes time to figure out what's wrong. And so that's one of the reasons why we built into the SQL database service what we call our built-in performance recommendations. So we're basically using machine learning to monitor your database and proactively tell you when we see things that you're doing that are suboptimal with it. And you just click that little blade, it brings up this thing here, and you'll see here's a set of recommendations that have automatically been calculated based on your application usage pattern against the database of things you should do to basically improve your performance and make it better. And you can see a lot of them here, you know, come down to things like index plans, where suddenly, hey, I'm actually pulling in a column that's not indexed, and I'm inadvertently creating a table scan on the system. Zoomed in and apparently clicked the wrong link. There we go. So for example, on this index plan will tell you, hey, you should create an index with these columns. It'll dramatically improve your performance. It's what's called a high impact change, meaning it'll make things dramatically better. You can even click use script and we'll show you the exact script to run in your database that'll create the right non-clustered index, dramatically improve your performance. And if you click on this thing, we'll even show you what we think the before and after will look like in terms of CPU performance, and you literally pop the clipboard, run it, and your system's going to get a heck of a lot faster. You know, similarly here, I'm doing queries that are not parameterized, and so this is another suggestion that we basically have, which is alter the database to always force parameterization of queries. Again, this will dramatically improve your SQL execution, avoid you having to keep scaling up your database. Instead, with these two simple changes, you can probably reduce the load in your database by about 60 to 70% and save yourself a whole bunch of money. And so that's just sort of a built-in feature that we have in the product. And again, we constantly are analyzing your database for you and are able to make these types of changes based on machine learning. And think of this as sort of a help coach that's basically assisting you all throughout the web. So in addition to performance, the other thing that we have built in the product is something we call threat detection. So how many people here have ever had a SQL injection attack inside their app or exposed the code that opened up a SQL injection attack? How many people here know what a SQL injection attack is? Great. You're all sure you've never had a SQL injection attack in your code. It's always scary when people say, no, I've never had that. Yeah, it's been super common. The reason I kind of joke about this is because it's a super common issue that most apps out there at some point or another time, unfortunately, have been exposed to. And so one of the things, and partly it's because it's really easy to do. And so let's just do a simple, demo of what one looks like. And so this is sort of like a simple CRM app that I've built here. And you know, if I want to do a SQL injection attack, it's pretty easy for me to even try testing it. I just go to any random web app out there, and whenever there's a text box or some type of input, just play around with concatenating and sticking stuff into the input that might cause a SQL exposure. So in this case here, I'm just adding a quote or 1=1... You might say, what the heck is that? Well, basically, I'm probing to see whether or not the application just sort of does a select query where it's taking the username and password and concatenating into a SQL string and saying, if username equals the password, log them in. And if that SQL was manually created, this is going to basically let me into the system because it's going to, that single quote after user is going to terminate the statement. When I say or 1=1, 1 always equals 1. And that basically means the where clause is always going to succeed. And then --- is going to basically comment out the rest of the where clause that actually makes sure the password is correct. And now when I execute this, boom, I'm logged into the system. And it's just simply because it was a coding error. I got lazy. I didn't actually explicitly say this was a string parameter. And I'm in. And you can do this not just obviously with text boxes, but you can do it with drop-down lists. Another common thing is once the drop-down list is a fixed set of numbers, why don't I just manually concatenate it? If you bypass the HTML and send a form post, you can probably actually get into the system that way. And you know, there's literally tens of thousands of sites every day that get hacked this way on the internet today. And so what we do, and the challenge with SQL injection attacks is they're often hard to figure out until basically someone is posting your data on the web or doing something really, really bad. That's usually when you discover, oh my god, we have a bug, and then you're trying to figure out where is it in your giant code base. And you know, it can be a pretty scary thing. So one of the things that we have built into SQL database is SQL injection attack protection and support. And so you'll notice both in the portal, we have a little security tab that's showing up red. And then the other thing we do is as soon as we detect what we think is a SQL injection attack, we send you an email that looks like this, where basically we said, hey, we think something is going wrong with your app. We think someone is actually trying to do a SQL injection attack against you. Log into the portal and apply these changes. And basically, this email links back into the portal, into this section here. And so we'll go ahead and click it. This is basically showing, hey, you've got a new attack just happened. If I click on it, and then view the vulnerable statement, you'll actually see this was the statement that I just executed. And you can see where, again, I commented out one of the password check, and I basically just executed the statement against the database, which got me into the system. And so the nice thing is, again, we're using machine learning to look at your SQL queries. If you turn this feature on, and we can automatically use machine learning heuristics to basically say, this looks like an abnormal SQL statement. This looks like either an exfiltration attack or where someone is deliberately trying to bypass your code, and flag it for you automatically. And that's just sort of a built-in feature of our SQL database service that you can leverage as a developer to build much more secure applications with very little effort. And again, this works with any language, any framework, any app type, and you can basically just turn it on individual databases, and you know, you now have an extra level of security where we're basically monitoring for you what's going on in the system. It can basically help provide alerts anytime we see something that's going wrong. So that's a little bit in terms of, you know, there's many other things obviously you can do with our SQL database feature. Those are just a couple of examples of some of them. And again, similar to what I mentioned at the very beginning in terms of how do we try to help set you up for success, you know, this is sort of an example of something we're building in the product to help guide you to be successful. So a lot of people here are using SQL. How many people here are using Postgres or MySQL? Okay, a lot of hands go up, great. Cool thing is we now have new relational database services for you, just like SQL DB, that provide Postgres as a SQL as a service and MySQL as a service as well. And these work just like SQL DB, so I can create a new Postgres database, 60 to 90 seconds later, it'll pop up and be deployed, just like you saw me do with SQL DB. What's nice about our options here in Azure is, just like with SQL DB, we always configure these in a highly available way. So we don't just stand up a single Postgres VM, we actually run it across multiple machines for high availability, and that's built in by default. Whereas if you would say AWS or Google, you'd end up having to either pay extra or manually configure that in the case of RDS to actually run across multiple instances. The other thing that's nice about these services is they do support that same elastic scale capability. So you can scale up and scale down your database with zero downtime. And they're 100% compatible with all existing drivers, libraries, and tools. So let's go ahead and show a demo of what that looks like. So we're going to go back to our Mac now. And what you can see here on my dashboard is this Azure Postgres database. If you want to create a new one, you just go ahead to New Databases, and you can see from this list we have SQL, and then we also have MySQL and Postgres as well on that list. So you just go ahead and click one of those to create it, and then once it's created, you get management experience just like you saw with SQL DB, where I have a nice blade, I have built-in analytics. We even allow you to specify which version of Postgres in MySQL you want to use. You can actually choose the exact version and control upgrades for more compatibility purposes. And we have built-in metrics, all built into the system. And because it is literally just Postgres as the engine, and we use the same management APIs, you can go ahead and load a tool like this, which is the standard Postgres admin tool that you can download from the web. It's a GUI-based tool. You see it obviously runs a Mac system. This is now logging into my Azure-based environment. And there is that demo DB that I basically created in my Azure subscription. And I'm basically just using the standard Postgres monitoring and management tool against it. And you start to see top there, there's some analytics starting to feed through. Those are real-time analytics coming from my Postgres as a service running inside Azure. Again, being managed using the standard Postgres GUI-based admin tool as part of it. Postgres experts in the audience, what's the command line tool to use to manage Postgres? PSQL, right? The P? PSQL, okay. Is it P underscore SQL? Or P? I don't think so, okay. So here's another cool thing that we do. Click the command shell. I showed earlier in that first demo and launched a new bash shell here in the cloud. I should mention when we do this, under the covers, Azure's creating a Linux VM for you. We deploy a container. And so when you're typing this bash shell, it's not trying to like emulate bash inside the browser. It actually is a full Unix-based environment that's running on the server. So you can do Vim. So let's say there's Vim literally running. Let's say, oh, I can't get out. But if you go to PSQL, you'll notice that we actually have it. We actually have it installed automatically inside the command shell. We also have the MySQL equivalent as well. We also have Git as well. So if you want to very quickly do something with the Postgres management tool and you don't have it installed locally on your environment, just click the cloud shell, connect to that Postgres database, and you can dump, change, or manage that PSQL database just using that environment as well. So nice little feature that's just sort of built in. Makes it even easier for you to manage your experience just like you would in a Postgres server anywhere else. So we've talked about relational databases with both SQL, Postgres, and MySQL. The other thing that we're seeing increasingly as developers are building great native cloud-based apps is just the scale at which you're working with data is growing exponentially. If you've got millions of phone users out there, mobile users out there, if you've got customers in lots of different countries around the world, you really need to start thinking about data at what we kind of call planet scale, which is just sort of a fundamentally new way to think about data versus how we've ever done it before. And one of the services that we're really excited about that we just launched 2 weeks ago is something we call Azure Cosmos DB, which is the world's first globally distributed multi-model database service. And really enables you to build sort of next generation applications in a really, really powerful way. So what does that mean, globally distributed multi-model database service? Well, let's first talk about the globally distributed part. And one of the things you can do with Cosmos DB is now create a data service that stores and replicates data all over the world. So instead of saying I'm going to deploy it only in Dublin, I can deploy it in an Azure Dublin region, I can deploy it in West Europe, I can deploy it in Asia, I can deploy it in Australia, North America, South America, and more. And what that means is every time I write a transaction, it will be replicated in all of those different locations automatically. And it basically means anytime one of my users hits the application, I can actually serve that request out of whichever region around the world happens to be closest to that end user. And the beauty is that the system takes care of replicating the data and the consistency across there for you, which dramatically simplifies building these types of applications and, you know, which would otherwise require thousands of hours in order to actually do this previously. What's nice about Cosmos DB is it's also what we call multi-model, meaning you can store not just relational data in it, but you can store key value pairs, document, column families, as well as graph data. And so you can also start to work with data in a more native format that happens to work well for your particular application. And we support multiple APIs that you can use to get access to this data. And so you can use our Document DB API, which gives you like a SQL-like API. We support MongoDB, the popular NoSQL database API. We support the Azure Table Storage API, if you want a sort of key value pair. We also support Gremlin, which is a graph-based API, as well as Spark for analytics. And so you can sort of choose which API you want to program against. And we work with all the existing popular libraries and frameworks for all these APIs. So if you are a Python developer and you're using MongoDB today, you can basically just take the existing library that you're already using, just point the connection string of Cosmos DB, and you don't have to install anything else locally on your development environment or runtime environment in order to connect and use it. We support all the same protocols. And then what's nice about Cosmos DB is it's really designed to scale to literally any need. So you can start with just a couple gigabytes of data, and if you want to, you can scale up to petabytes. You can start with, say, 100 transactions per second, and then provision it for 10 million transactions per second. And we basically give you kind of a scale elasticity that's sort of pretty unique and differentiated versus any other data system out there. And what's nice about the system is not only do we provide those capabilities, but we also provide some really strict SLAs that you can use to monitor the system, but also kind of build applications around it, knowing that we'll meet these promises. And in particular, the SLAs not only provide an availability SLA, meaning the service will stay up and you can call it, but we also include performance latency as well as throughput guarantees. You can say, I need to be able to do a million transactions per second against the system, and we'll guarantee you can. And then what's further on the latency side, we'll guarantee, for example, all those million transactions per second that they complete with single-digit millisecond latency time at the 99th percentile. And no other database system on the planet does that. And that enables you to build applications, again, that can really push the system hard and can be really quite differentiated in the industry. Jet.com is a retailer in the US, probably maybe not heard from here because they're not international yet. But they are a startup that started off on Azure. Within 12 months, they had a system that was running. And 2 years after that, they were just bought by Walmart for $3.5 billion. They're kind of a very successful startup. I wish every startup was that successful. And they see a tremendous amount of load because they run the e-commerce system now for Walmart, which is the largest retailer in the world. And they deploy their application across three unique Azure regions in the US. So they have an east, west, and central regions. That way they can basically send users to whichever region is closest to them geographically to have immediate response time. And then during peak holiday periods, which we call Black Friday in the US, which is our top retail period of the year, they scale out Cosmos DB to support 100 trillion transactions that day, which is like an absolutely insane number. I actually had to check it twice before I put it in the slide. So it's like, you must have added a couple zeros. And it's because they do lots of analytics, so these aren't orders, but basically they're hitting the system constantly to optimize pricing, shopping cart experience, analytics flows, and they just want to make sure they had enough headroom on that day that they could handle anything. And the ability to scale up that fast and that high is truly astronomical. And the beauty is afterwards they're able to scale it down when they don't need that throughput. And again, they're paying only for what they use. And the amazing thing is all the stuff, they get single-digit millisecond response time, which again is pretty unprecedented, not just on average, but at the 99th percentile, meaning 99 of 100 requests are guaranteed to be at single-digit millisecond, which is pretty astonishing. So let's go ahead and take a look at what it's like to build one of these systems and what the experience is like. So let's do a couple things. Let me go into this directory here. I'm going to launch an application. Let's go over locally, port 8000. And this particular application is a simple Node.js app that provides kind of a wiki experience for Marvel comic book characters. Anyone here like Marvel comics? It's good in a developer crowd, it's easier to do that. I find it doesn't work as well in like a financial analyst crowd. You can sort of see in this experience here, basically has a bunch of content about Marvel comic book heroes. And then one of the things you can see on the right-hand side is when I'm on, say, the Tony Stark page, I can actually ask questions in this dialogue to Tony Stark in kind of a natural language query syntax that brings back results. So for example, if I ask him, who are your friends? I'm gonna hit enter, hits the database, brings back all his friends. Now I could build this in a couple different ways. I could build this obviously in a relational database way, and I just say, you know, have a friends column and kind of have kind of a master detail style relationship. And that would work. In this case here, I'm using a graph database instead, which is one of the options that we have with Cosmos DB. And so instead of storing it in a relational way, instead I'm just looking at what nodes are related to Tony Stark in the graph. And where that becomes very powerful is when I want to ask more complex questions. So for example, who are your enemies who work for Hydra? So I'm basically asking a question which is not immediate, but actually looking at relationships between two entities in the graph. That's now a really easy query to write in a graph database. That would be a really expensive database query to write in a relational model. And so these types of things where you can start to push the boundaries of how to work with things because you have a graph. It's the same reason why, like, say, Facebook or a social network stores their database in graphs. These are kind of how you can basically infer relationships across people. And for a lot of scenarios, it would be a lot faster. So simple app, but fun app. We can go deeper on that. Let's actually look at how we build this app using Cosmos DB. So I go into the Azure Management Console, go hit new, and you saw me earlier create a SQL database, I showed you how you can create a Postgres for MySQL database. If you scroll down this list some more, you'll notice there's a Cosmos DB database. And so what I could do is just say, create a new Cosmos DB database, I could give it a name, Leprechaun DB2. And then one thing that's slightly different than, say, Postgres or SQL is we actually explicitly ask you when you create the database, what API do you want to use against it? This is sort of your default API that will optimize the experience around. And so you'll notice that one of the APIs is called Gremlin, which is a graph-based API database. I can also do MongoDB, I can do kind of more of a SQL API or a table key value pair. And I just choose where I want to deploy the initial instance, hit create, and it'll go ahead and stand up a database instance for me. Let me show you one that deployed earlier and had already loaded in some of the graph data into. That's right here. So again, we get a bunch of data we'll look at in just a second. What I'm going to show you though is if you click on this data explorer that's in the left nav, we basically provide a way that you can look at the data inside the system, and in particular the graph data. So we're going to hit my filter, and this is going to go ahead and hit the database and bring back a bunch of nodes of our Marvel comic characters and visualize it directly in the experience. So you can see here what some of those Marvel comic characters look like. Now right now they're grids, which is not super easy to see. We actually let you in this visualizer. If I wanted to, I could change it so I can show the names. I can colorize it based on that. And now you can kind of see a little bit more in terms of who are the different Marvel comic characters, who are related to who in that graph. And sort of a simple visualization model to actually go ahead and see it. And that little apply filter box here lets me optionally go ahead and write queries that can be pretty arbitrarily complex. And that's basically how, when I said who are your enemies that also work for Hydra, I can basically write that using that graph syntax, which is sort of an alternative to SQL, to basically explore the graph and pull back those results. And it's all very finely tuned for storing and traversing these nodes and these edges throughout the system. And you know, right now, there's not that many characters in the Marvel Comic universe, so it's not a huge graph database. But what I can tell you is some teams inside Microsoft are now using this for their own systems and now store more than a trillion nodes in the system. And are able to get that same single-digit millisecond response time at that scale. So it scales to very, very large size systems that you can leverage. So this thing here, we can actually visualize entirely in the portal. Let's go ahead and look at what does this look like from a code perspective. And so I'm just going to load up here Visual Studio Code on Mac. You'll notice this is a Node.js app. All I had to do was import the standard Gremlin NPM package. And so I'm just, this is a TypeScript version of this Node app. So basically just importing the Gremlin library. And then when I want to write those queries, notice that's the Gremlin syntax, g.b, starting with the hero ID that I'm on, in the case it was Tony Stark, then I can basically build up a more complex query expression, add it, execute against the system, that's how I got the results back. So a very easy way that I can program against it. There's a Node API for Gremlin, there's a Java API, there's a .NET API, there's a Python API, and more. So it's pretty easy to kind of use all these different systems with whatever language you want and be able to code directly against it. And where Cosmos DB becomes really powerful is not just that it's a, you know, in this case here, a graph database, but it could also be a key value or or a document store as well. It's really this sort of globally distributed nature that ends up really being quite differentiated. And so if you click on the Replicate Data Globally tab inside the Management Console, you can see all the places right now that I'm actually running this application, this database, sorry. And so anything that has the blue check there basically means I have an instance of Cosmos DB deployed in that Azure region that has the Marvel Comic data loaded. And if I want to scale up to a new geography, so let's say for example, hey, there's no one in the south of the United States, there's no region in the south of the United States that currently has the system, I just click that link, it's safe. And that just basically told Azure to take this Cosmos DB database, replicate it to Texas, and basically stand it up in an Azure region there. And now I can basically have my customers in the southwest of the United States get immediate access against that data, again, a single-digit millisecond response time as they access the system. And that's literally how easy it is to replicate your data system anywhere in the world. Click go, and we'll basically take care of provisioning it out to that location, and then you can write an application in that place that can access the database instantaneously. Now, when you replicate data all over the place, you know, one of the challenges, or one of the things you gotta think about as a developer is, what is the consistency model that you wanna guarantee around the data? What do I mean by that? Well, say we had an application running here in our North Europe region here in Dublin, and I write an update to the database. When is the update complete? And we support with Cosmos DB what are called multiple consistency models that you can choose from. And so if you're coming from a traditional database background, you know that when you write a transaction, it doesn't complete until it's guaranteed to be complete. And when you're running in a single region, that makes a lot of sense, because it just basically means the data is written on disk, and then we make it committed to, and then basically you reply back. In a world where you're running your data in 20 different places, there's an interesting challenge, which is, how many of those places does the data need to be replicated to before the transaction is marked as complete? If you're doing something like a financial transaction, like a credit card transaction, you might want to say it's strong consistency, which means it's committed everywhere. So if someone tries to do a transaction in Australia 1 millisecond later, they're guaranteed to see the exact same data that's in North Europe. And we support strong consistency as one of the options. What we find though in global scale and for a lot of scenarios though, strong consistency isn't really what you need or even want. Because if you guarantee that it's written everywhere around the world before the transaction completes, it means your transactions are going to be slower because basically you've got to copy data all over the world. And so we also then have options inside Cosmos DB where you can go ahead and change the consistency model, which basically means we'll commit the transactions once we guarantee that in North Europe it's completely consistent. And then you basically respond immediately to the application and know that the data is safe. And then it will eventually show up in the other regions over, say, a second or two, and basically replicate everywhere else around the world. You can also do something like session consistency, which is great for, and that eventual consistency probably for this wiki app is probably what you want, because if someone makes a change to Tony Stark's wiki page, it doesn't have to be atomically consistent in 26 places around the world. It's okay if it takes a second or two before Australia sees it. We also then have what's called session consistency as an option. And with session consistency, it's ideal for things like a shopping cart, where we'll basically guarantee if you write something to a session, if you then do a subsequent read on that session, we'll basically guarantee that any reads on that shopping cart, regardless of where they happen in the world, will always see the correct state of that shopping cart. And we do that at the per session level, so we don't block any other user. And then again, you can do strong consistency if you do want to guarantee that the data is written everywhere. And the ability to kind of choose which consistency model you want based on your scenario ends up being super, super powerful and something that's quite differentiated with Cosmos DB. This is called default consistency in the admin tool, because this is what will be there by default when you do operations. The other powerful thing about Cosmos DB is you can override the consistency model on a per scenario basis. And so you can have inside this wiki, hey, all of the content is at the eventual consistency model. I'm going to have, when someone signs up to the site, we're going to use session level consistency for their site-specific personalization. And if someone were to pay us for a subscription to the site, I'm going to use strong consistency. We have one database that supports all three, and you as a developer can choose based on the scenario which consistency model you want to enforce. In case you're wondering what this thing keeps popping up, it's super annoying. This is actually not a bug. This is someone on my team who has checked in to the subscription that I'm also using